Part 5. I Believe I Can Fly, Paris, First Class International. Brief note just on the question of classiness. What is classy? Here with some suggestions. Classy includes first class travel, seafood, Thousand Island dressing, dimmers, potpourri, natural smells, fresh lemon. Not classy, wet guffs, old strippers, poverty, electrical faults, spray on deodorant, particularly when it crusts, most mould, and illness. Rerouting. Donna's sex pizza scheme has lent her a new glow, and she loves the slightly better commuter route she's flying. In front of the irrepressible Randy Jones, Donna demonstrates her delight at the fact that finally she gets to do a full business class service, including the opportunity to bake cookies. Jones laughs as if to say, "I'm just trying to plough through this hell, but you're specifically indicating enjoyment." He contrasts Donna's aptitude to his lack of commitment, saying that he still can't believe that she didn't outperform him on the exam. It's such a sparkling scene in its own right that one barely sees its plot function. That's why we get a second scene right after it to consolidate its hidden message. It starts with a Barrettian gros plan of bottled cheese being squeezed onto a cracker, before cutting to a wide two-shot showing Ted and Donna in her apartment. In the deep background, we see the blinking, multicoloured lights of a Christmas tree. Cut to close-ups. Donna says that she might get a lawyer to look into this matter of the examination assessment. A frisson between them. Donna says perhaps Ted could help her out. He reminds her that he isn't a lawyer yet. Donna says words to the effect that yet is very much the operative term. Ted, angled as ever, asks why Donna believes in him so much. Donna replies by saying, "Somebody's got to." You find a scene from the golden age of cinema more dazzling than this, and I'll jet-wash your patio. But its fizz conceals a few matters that, on second glance, may reveal some faulty reasoning. Given that Ted is enrolled at law school, how surprising is it that he will become a lawyer? I'd go so far as to say that it would be more surprising if he didn't become a lawyer. Also, Ted has parents who believe that he could do anything. He was getting encouragement until it came out of the poor boy's ears, which means that Donna's statement that somebody has to believe in him is simply not the case. Not only are there people who already believe in him, there's no real necessity to believe in him. If anything, people believe in him too much. Ted grabs Donna's arms and pulls her into a kiss. Ted's always grabbing and pawing Donna, to the extent that I feel he should just leave her alone and give her a little space. Maybe she doesn't want to be pawed. Why does everything have to be said in this supposedly, you now have 3 seconds to secure your stomachs, sexy way? Donna can't even ask for legal advice without it being interpreted as innuendo. Maybe Ruffalo, the embers of that early bacchanalian draft still smouldering, is trying to wrestle the scene back to its textual roots. And yet Ted is a family man, someone who represents stability and the possibility of connection. Oh, the duality of man! Donna fears family. She is worried about commitment and being open/vulnerable. The prologue, in which her callous carers didn't even have the decency to shelter her birthday candle from the wind, tells us all we need to know about the privations of her youth. She became hard, like a brioche left out in the sun. But man needs society, as does woman. During another emotionally forensic exchange with Randy Jones, much of this is underlined. Ted has invited Donna over for Christmas. Qu'est-ce que la prob? Is very much Randy's attitude. Donna counters. With regards to family plus time, her trotters are arctic. You see, people always said that she was a no-hoper from Nevada and that she would never amount to much. If she opens her huge heart to Ted, what will become of her labours in the aviation service sector? And there, in nutshell format, is Donna's dilemma. I don't think even an on-screen caption could have put it more clearly or succinctly. It also happens to be the dilemma of the great American dream. America is an immigrant country, or at least it used to be until some of the Caucasians decided to pretend they'd always been there. Everyone's true place of origin is the ocean. Make your mark, establish yourself, and haul in the green. That's the USA way. The greatest danger to that trajectory? Happiness. The American Constitution enshrines the pursuit of happiness, but the key word here is pursuit. It's all about the chase. It's no good having a nation filled with happy folk emitting contented sighs and settling down for another in a long line of restorative snoozes. That kind of attitude is not going to scare off the man in the black pajamas. You need military might, and for military might, you need economic power. The great danger to the great American dream is a lack of productivity. If love derails that, then there's instability, dependence, disaster. That's why all the great chaps of history have been emotionally cauterized. If such a notable found fond feelings for his fellow man rising up unbidden, he would banish them back to his treasonous breast. It's that kind of spirit that allows a man to wipe off the mob's gob and stride forth. This is essentially the theme of Phantom Thread, Paul Thomas Anderson's mushroom omelette dramedy. The main cove, goes by the name of Woodcock, is obsessed with sewing, but in swoops a waitress who queers the whole scheme. Will he stay on top of the dress business, or will he let this brazen interloper scupper his solipsism? Exactly the same plot as Top. Wouldn't surprise me if the whole thing was lifted wholesale. But Phantom Thread was garlanded, whereas Top wasn't even nominated for Best Screenplay. Such is the fate of art. One man's Michelangelo is another man's Milli Vanilli.